about that rainstorm and tornadoes, huh? Did it rain at all? Okay, I haven't seen it rain. So I've been here about 3.5 years now, and those of you who've had encounters or interactions with me won't be surprised when I tell you that I have a less than perfect memory. My mom used to tell me growing up all the time that I would forget my head if it wasn't attached, right? And anybody else's mom ever say that? Yeah, I think it's a mom thing they teach you in school. It makes no sense. I asked my mom one time about it, and the wooden spoon got me, so I didn't ask again. But the thing about my memory is, and Leanne, I'm sure Jay can understand this, we can remember every baseball statistic of all our favorite players, right? Like, I can tell you that Kenny Boswell in 1969 batted 284 and had 51 consecutive games without an error at second base. I know that. I don't know why. It's useless knowledge. But I may forget a phone number or an address or a birthday or an anniversary or a name or a face, right? And I've tried all those little techniques they teach you to try to improve your memory, especially when it comes to names, because I don't like not knowing people's names. And you know that you're supposed to like associate, like Don, if I was trying to remember who you were, I would try to, they teach you to associate something with that person, right? So you can remember their name. When I do that, my problem is I spend all time trying to figure out what to associate that I never really get his name, so I don't really know who Tom is. Thank you very much, Tom, Don. And so I just don't remember. I'm like that little boy, and maybe you've heard the story, little boy. His mom was just losing her mind because she would tell this kid to remember to put his toys away all the time, and he never would, right? His tricycle would be in the driveway, and the teddy bear would be in the bird bath, and mom would lose her mind. One day she's backing out of the driveway, and she hits the tricycle, and that just set her off. Right? And she looks at this little boy and she just, why can't you remember anything? And the little boy just, in ways that little boys do, those big brown puppy dog eyes, said, gee, Mom, I guess I just have a good forgetter. How many of you have good forgetters? How many had good forgetters before you got older? Right? Yeah, it's good. See, because I used to worry. Like they said, when you get older, I thought, oh my gosh, maybe my mom was right. Maybe I will lose my head. I'm not sure. But there was a guy, I did this for Matt, a long, long time ago in a galaxy far, far away, a man by the name of Bonilla lived, and he looked something like this, and he was an architect. He was like a first-class, world-renowned architect of the time. But while I don't know how good his forgetter was, I do know there was a time when he forgot the way Jesus concluded the Sermon on the Mount. And I know that because I know the story of the building, that one of the buildings that he built. See, in 1174, he was hired to build what would become his most well-known piece of work. He was to build a bell tower that was going to be 8 stories tall, 187 feet high, and it was going to be part of this cathedral. Well, they started building it. He drew the plans. They started building it, but then they encountered one little problem. The sand, the dirt, the soil that they were building the foundation on was too soft, and they had already built 3 or 4 floors before they realized it, and the building began to tilt, and then to tilt a little more, and now it's 17 feet off center, and it's a Leaning Tower of Pisa, and it was built because this architect, who should have known better, forgot the words Jesus said. Because it's how Jesus ended his Sermon on the Mount. And I know Bonanno have heard these words because he was a faithful Catholic. He was in church. And this is a well-known story. If you have your Bibles, open up to Matthew chapter 7. We're going to just look at this story. And I'm going to read it off the screen because I accidentally put a different version than my Bible. So, and when I did 9:50 at the open skies, they couldn't follow me. So, therefore is the most important word in this passage. Because what Matthew does, or what Jesus did, whether it was editorial or not, What Matthew wanted to make sure the readers understood by using the word therefore, this was the conclusion of the sermon. And he wanted to make sure that this conclusion tied the rest of the sermon together with this conclusion. What he was saying is, everything you heard before, this is essential to understand that. This is the point to all of that. So chapter 5, chapter 6, and the first part of chapter 7 is all about what is after this therefore. And here's what comes after this therefore. Everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a wise man who's built his house on a rock. The rain came, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against the house. Yet it did not fall because it had a foundation built on the rock. But everyone who hears these words of mine and does not put them into practice is like a foolish man who built his house on sand. The rain came, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against the house, and it fell with a great crash. It's a well-known story. And there was a point that Jesus wanted us to understand by putting this at the end of his Sermon on the Mount. But what's important about this story isn't what Jesus said. It's also what he didn't say. See, notice, Jesus did not say, everyone who hears these words of mine would be like the wise man. That's not what he said. And he didn't say, everyone who hears these words of mine and believes everything I say is like a wise man. And he didn't say, everyone who believes, who hears these words of mine and studies them carefully in Sunday school and or Bible study is like the wise man. That's not what he said. And he didn't say, everyone who hears these words of mine and teaches and preaches them to others is like a wise man. That's not what he said. Because see, Jesus wanted us to understand that hearing and listening and believing and teaching and studying and preaching the word found in the Sermon on the Mount is not enough. Because what Jesus did say, everyone who hears these words and puts them into practice is like a wise man who built his house on a rock. There's a big difference. It's not about hearing. It's not about believing. It's not about studying. It's not about teaching. It's not about preaching. Those are all important. But to live the Sermon on the Mount, to build your house on a good foundation, to build your life on something that won't fall, is when we put those words into practice. My preaching professor, a guy by the name of Zan Holmes, who I think is the greatest preacher I've ever heard, and he would go ballistic in preaching class when we would preach a sermon. If the preacher who was preaching did not answer what he believed to be the most important question that a preacher has to answer. In fact, what he said is, if a preacher fails to answer this question, then it's their congregants just wasted 10, 15, 20, 30 minutes of their life. And the question was simple. So what? That's the question. So in other words, if you leave here on a Sunday morning and you say, so what? And you don't have an answer to the so what, then you can email me and told you I owe you 30 minutes because I wasted your time. Because if there's not a so what, if you are not told what you can do to make this word that you just heard alive and part of your life, if there's not some sort of call to action, if you will, then you just heard, maybe entertained, I don't know, but you didn't hear a sermon that can touch your life, that can impact your life, that can change your life, or that could start a revolution. But Jesus was such a great preacher, he never missed the point. He always answered the so what, and he answered it in such a way that it was crystal clear to anyone who was sitting on the mountain with Jesus listening to that sermon. Because his so what is just simple. What Jesus says, it's not intellectual knowledge that is important. And it's not reciting some sinner's prayer that makes it all good. What Jesus says is that it is about obedience and about putting into practice what we hear. That's how we build a solid foundation. That's what he says. For Jesus, the question is not whether or not we say nice, polite, and enthusiastic things about Jesus. Those are important. That's not the question. Nor is the question whether we hear his words and we listen to them and we study him and we ponder them and we memorize them so that our heads are just full of this knowledge, right? Important. It's not the question. For Jesus, the question was simple. Do we do what we say, and do we do what we know? In other words, do we take what we've learned and put it into practice? Do we live, or do we just hear? Years after Sermon on the Mount, James, the brother of Jesus, is credited for writing a letter. Now, this letter was quite controversial. You got to understand. In fact, Martin Luther, the great reformer, he wrote the 66 books in the Bible. He wrote 64 commentaries. He refused to write one for the book of Revelation, and he refused to write one for the letter of James because he believed the letter of James didn't belong in the Bible. He believed it was heretical because he read it and saw that it was about works righteousness rather than faith by grace, faith and grace, right? So Luther couldn't stand, but Luther missed the point. See, this is what he says in the first chapter. And Tom, this is going to be my fault, just so you know. I'm going to read the first one, and then I'm just going to skip to verse 26 on the second passage, okay? So here's the first one. You must be doers of the word and not only hearers who mislead themselves. Those who hear but don't do the word are like those who look at their faces in a mirror. They look at themselves, walk away, and immediately forget what they were like. But there are those who study the perfect law, the law of freedom, and continue to do it. They don't listen and then forget, but they put into practice in their lives, and they'll be blessed whatever they do. And then in verse 26, it says this, as a lifeless body is dead, so faith without actions is dead. I spent 3 years on the campus of SMU at Perkins. And chapel was every Tuesday, Thursday. And I made most of them. I probably made more chapel than I did some classes. But of all those chapel services, I remember one sermon. All these years later, I remember it. It was preached by a lady named Beverly Sawyer, who was a registrar. And she preached on the James passage. And she ended her sermon with these words, the so what? And she said this, so, you want to be doers of the word. And then she just sat down. And 20-something years later, I not only remember that question, I remember what was going through my head and my heart when she asked it. See, that's the question. Do you want to be a doer of the word? Are you going to put in practice all those red letter words that Jesus preached about before he told this story? You see, the so what, the call to action, is that you and I are called to be the radical, counterintuitive love that Jesus just spent 3 chapters preaching about. That's easy to say, but it's really difficult to do. So I have a question, and I want a show of hands. If I were to ask you, are you wise or are you foolish, how would you answer? Now, I'm sure if we did a show of hands, most people would say they're wise because they want to look good, and they you know, you may be wise. But I'm not going to ask you, are you wise or foolish in that sense? I'm going to ask you in the sense of putting the Sermon on the Mount, the red letter words of Jesus, the most important words he spoke, into practice. Wise or foolish? So I thought what I'd do is I'd give you the same kind of test that I gave myself. And I decided I would take this and I would review my last week, just a week, because I couldn't remember past that, so I just took the week, okay? And I looked at the decisions and the choices that I made in the past week in the light of the Sermon on the Mount. And I asked myself some questions. Here they are. I'm going to ask you. Now, I don't want a show of hands. I just want you to think about it. Okay? First question. Are you living as salt and light? Remember, that was like the first sermon. And it wasn't a commandment Jesus gave. It was what you were, what you are. It's how Jesus saw you. And that's what you were created to be. And so the question to follow that up is, are you turning the world upside down? Did you make a decision this week that would turn the world upside down? Are you salt and light? Are you wise or are you foolish? Be honest with yourself, because that's all you're answering to. Second question, are you moving from law to love? In other words, is the relationship more important than following the rules? In the decisions you made in the last week, are you choosing to love God and others or choosing something else? That's the question. Wise or foolish? Are you being what you created, what you were created to be? In other words, are you living your life this past week believing that you are a child of God? And living your life that way. Or as I like to tell you at the end of every service, did you live your life this way believing that you're really the best of the best of the best? Did you? Because your life is going to be different if you lead. Your decisions are going to be different if you lead it that way. Wise or foolish? Here's one that busted me really bad, for the record. Are you living the 57 words that are the Lord's Prayer? In other words, did you forgive like you were forgiven? Did you build people up or tear people down? Did you do small things but do them with great love that could change the world? That's the Lord's Prayer. Wise or foolish? Hear the word or do the word? Next, does your heart, well, what's more important, God or your stuff? And then last, are you choosing the other over yourself? The way Paul said it in Philippians is, do you look at the other person as more valuable than you? Do you think more highly of the other person than you think of yourself? Say, are you willing to, did you empty yourself this week out of love for a neighbor? Wise or foolish? Now, I ask myself the same questions. And I look back over the last week, and I'll tell you, there were things I did where, you know, yay God. I actually surprised God and did it wise. But there were also some, when I look at those questions, where I was foolish. I wasn't the wise on the rock. I was the foolish guy with the sand. And I thought about that. And I tried to remember some of the more foolish decisions that went against what the Sermon on the Mount would have preached. And I started looking at them, and I tried to, and maybe it's a rationalization, but I think it's true. I think my heart was always in the right place. I wanted to do what was right, but oftentimes what I realized, I simply forgot. My good forgetter took over. I forgot that I was supposed to live what Jesus, and I'm the preacher, and I just forgot. And that really bothered me. Because you're not supposed to forget this stuff, no matter how bad your memory is. So I started thinking, well, there's got to be, and I can't be the only one with this problem. And I was driving home, and all of a sudden I remembered the children of Israel wandering around the wilderness, right? And how furious God would get with them because they kept forgetting. They forgot they were children of God. They forgot they were claimed by God. They forgot that they were chosen by God, not for some privilege, but to live their life in such a way that when others saw them living, they would see God. Which, by the way, is exactly what Jesus is saying in the Sermon on the Mount. If you're a follower of His, you are chosen not to be like some privilege, but a responsibility of living your life in such a way that when people see you, they see Jesus. That's the Sermon on the Mount. And the people of Israel forgot that. And I thought, well, if they forgot it, surely I can forget it. And if God got that mad at them for forgetting it, surely God found a way to fix the problem, right? And that's when I remember Numbers 15. See, if you know your Hebrew scripture, you know Numbers 15. I don't have to even tell you the story because everyone's read Numbers, right? It's the most exciting book in the Bible. You could get mad at me if I preached a series out of Numbers, not out of Leviticus. But right, in Numbers 15, God comes to Moses and said, look, we got this problem. Your people have good forgetters. And Moses, not my people, they're your people, right? Because Moses is real quick of disowning them, right? And God said, okay, my people have good forgetters. I'm going to help fix it. So you know what they did? God told Moses, tell every one of the folks, every one of the my people, to tie a blue string on their garment. That's what he says. It's in Numbers 15 if you don't believe me. Have a blue string hanging on your garment somewhere so that when you see the blue string, you will remember what you are forgetting. You'll remember that you're a child of God. You'll remember that you are called and chosen to be not for special privilege, but for the responsibility of living your life that goes against the counterintuitive world way the world lives. That's what he said. In fact, if you, what I believe, there's a story, I'm going to go off script. There's a story in Luke's gospel where a woman is healed, who had been bleeding 12 years. Remember that story? And she touches the hem of the robe of Jesus. Remember that? You know, my belief is that the robe that she touched, the hem that she touched, the part that she touched, was the blue string that was hanging down from Jesus' garment along the hem, because that string would remind her of who she was and who she was. And it's the most important part. In fact, if you are a Jewish person today, Orthodox, you have a prayer shawl known as a tzitzit, and it would have a blue string on it because that's what God commanded. So I thought, I remember someone telling me, you know, Marty, if you want to remember something, tie a string around your finger. And I never would, because you would look goofy with this string walking around your finger. But maybe it'll work. Maybe you'll remember what you were forgetting. So I took 1 + 1 and I made 3. We passed out blue strings, right? Anybody have a blue string? If not, raise your hand. You should have some. We have plenty. Where's my ushers? Does anybody need one? Okay, good. So in here, now, I couldn't do it myself because I'm uncoordinated. I mean, I'm a mess. I had to get someone to do it for me because I couldn't tie the string around my finger. It's like when I put my cufflinks on, when I wear cufflinks, I have to wake Jill up. Hey, put these on because I can't coordinate. So here's what I want you to do. Tie the blue string around your finger. It's biblical. No, seriously, when you go out and someone says, why you have a blue string? Well, it's biblical. I'm following the word of God, and make them look it up. You can sound bright and you can say, what, you don't read Numbers 15? What's wrong with you? Okay? And I'm not going to ask you to keep it for a week because that would be gross because it get all wet and smelly and mildew, I guess. but for the day. Just for the day. And then maybe after today, put it somewhere where you'll see it. So that every time you see the blue string, you'll remember the red letter words of Jesus on the Sermon on the Mount. You'll remember not to just be a hearer of the word, but to be a doer of the word. You might remember what Jesus says, whoever hears these words and puts them into practice, those are the wise men and women who build their foundation on rock. So, in case you need to know what the so what is of this sermon, simple. Let's tie one on so we can remember. Because if you want to start a revolution, it begins with remembering and then being a doer of the word. That's the gospel. That's what Jesus was all about when he preached the Sermon on the Mount. And those are the words that begin a revolution. And it may not sound like good news, because it may change the way you have to live, but it really is the good news. Because together we can change the world. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit.